Welcome to the Curiosity Solution. I'm your host, Beverly Beal. Join us as we explore the science of curiosity, share stories of people who've used curiosity to improve their lives, and maybe inspire some aha moments along the way. Welcome, everybody, to the Curiosity Solution. I'm your host, Beverly Beal. Today, we have a wonderful guest, Kate Ginsburg. You know, at first when I met her, I thought she was just, you know, they say just because professional organizers are magicians. When they come into your home, they can see patterns and habits that you can't, kind of like what I do with feng shui. But the difference is she then helps you take things and actually make them, you know, organizers do that. But what Kate does is what I had to have her on my show, because how one goes from, I read all this beforehand and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did this go out of my brain already? I'm just going to blame menopause and Austin allergies.
Absolutely. It's what we all do.
Really? So Kate, you know what? I'm going to let you start talking about kind of where the world you came from and then how you got to here.
So I really never intended to start a business or be an entrepreneur. It really was out of necessity. In my prior life, I was a lab instructor at a university in Iowa, expecting my first baby. And when we were about 7 months into my pregnancy, found out that we were getting transferred from Iowa to Austin with my now ex-husband's company. And they wanted us there in 4 weeks. And I went,
Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of things I'll do, but not that. And so we ended up delaying that until our baby was 3 weeks old. And I was like, okay, daycare in Austin, and started looking and discovered that I was, you know, after, so I have a degree in psychology. It's not super useful. I don't have a PhD. It's a problem there. So I had been doing grad classes and things, but didn't want to try to balance grad school and work and a baby. That seemed like a lot. And so I reached out to a woman in Des Moines where we were living, who drove around town in this little vehicle that said legs on lease, legs on lease on the back. And I called her up. I was like, will you tell me how you got started? Her slogan is, we'll do most anything legal. And I went, oh, okay. Sure. And she very kindly and graciously sat down with me, and I showed up with like my giant round belly, and she's like, I don't know if you're going to be able to do this. I went, well, I don't have a choice. And so she sat down and kind of walked me through how she started her business. Because I couldn't bear the thought of paying $1,500 a month, which was basically my entire paycheck, that, you know, anything that I was qualified to do. And so I decided I would just open an errand business, and Queen of To Do was born. We officially launched in January of 2011 when my son was 11 weeks old. And about 6 months in, found I wasn't getting any traction or as much traction as I needed to. And we were running out of our you know, meager savings at that point. And so I started finding people who needed household help. And, you know, hey, I'm stretched too thin. I need help with my laundry. I need help with my dishes. And loaded up my baby in a carrier and started doing that. And Queen of To Do has really just expanded from there. Anything that I was capable of doing, raised by a single mom in the Midwest, like, I know how to use tools, and like, I'm resourceful and can find things, and, you know, I can problem solve with the best of them. And so I really just started kind of doing whatever people needed that was in my skill set. And once word got out, it just really began to flourish. You know, I have a knack for seeing systems and like spatially arranging things so that they work really well, and for streamlining. And that's really where Queen of To Do started. We do very, very little in the way of errands anymore. So despite my initial intentions to just have it be a simple errand service, it's become so much more than that.
Oh, I love that. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. You're going to say something else.
Oh, no, I wasn't.
Okay. No, but I love how you were willing to roll with the punches, that you were willing to go with the flow. Most of the people that I know that have a psychology degree tend to be relatively intuitive anyway, and curious about how the brain works, whether that's intuition or curiosity. That's always that little, okay, let's go ahead and parse those things out. I don't know if you really can separate that. But the fact that you were offering an option for people who needed that extra little help, I can see how you're so successful. Now, I know that when, first of all, I have to kind of come back a little bit to the daycare issue, and just in realizing how much of your paycheck was going to go towards that. Actually, that's the same situation I found myself in. And part of the reason why I also ended up looking for ways to work for myself, because when I also had my first child, within a year, I had worked for Procter & Gamble and I got laid off. And we were living in Utah. And again, trying to find even, anything that didn't require a lot of travel. That was the key. Right. My husband was already traveling quite a bit. And so it was like, okay, yeah. Had I known of a service like you that could have helped with some of those tasks, then maybe I would have had a different choice. But that, I don't think anything like that had existed at the time. So now, Kate, one of the other things, though, that, again, we had talked a little bit about is just how successful this business has been and how you are in the process of really scaling. So let's talk a little bit about, we were connected through another mutual friend in the Dallas area, because you're actually going to a program to teach you how to scale that. What I'm curious about is, how did you know that was the next right step for you?
So kind of my mantra in life is just like sort of assessing what aligns with me. I, for a long while, I fell into that trap of give and give and give and give and give, because I'm the mom and of course my kids have to come first, and I'm a business owner and of course the business has to come first and the clients have to come first. I was the quintessential get shit done girl. And I had a life experience, let's say, back in 2018, where the universe smacked me right square in the face with, nope, you're going to have help. And I went, but I don't want help. I can do it all. And it's like, absolutely not. And I'm going to make sure you can't. My second husband was diagnosed with lymphoma in, I guess it was November of 2017, when we had a 10-month-old baby. And he underwent chemo and then a stem cell transplant. And in February of 2018, his stem cell transplant had him inpatient for 3 weeks. So I have two kids, one in school, one in daycare. I have a business that I'm running. I have a very, very ill husband who is in a hospital. And what they don't tell you about stem cell transplants before you do them is what they are doing is actually giving you a lethal dose of chemotherapy and then hopefully bringing you back. And so, and I understand why they do that. They don't want to scare you. But at the same time, like, you find that out afterwards and you're like, oh, that's mildly terrifying.
Just mildly.
Just a smidge. But I knew at that point, I was like, okay, there's no way I can do this all and still sleep. And so I ended up just leaning hard on our village of friends and family and loved ones, and anything that anyone offered, I said yes. And ended up our safety net caught us. And not only that, I really struggled with this idea of like, no, I can handle this. I can do all of this. And a friend was like, why don't you want us to love you? And I went,
oh my gosh.
And that was
say that one more time.
So I was like, I have to do this all myself. And a dear, dear friend who I had known, you know, 7, 8 years at that point asked me, why don't you want us to love you? And I went, oh God, dagger to the heart. You're killing me here. But it really clicked in my brain that by being fiercely independent and not allowing other people to help me, I was depriving them of that same like really great feeling I get when I solve a client's problem and they go, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. And just that deep sense of gratitude that you get, I was stealing that from other people, people that I love dearly. And like, I want them to have every joy in life. And I was the roadblock. And so that was really where I went, okay, it's okay for me to ask for help and accept it. And not just ask, but say, this is the help I need. And so that really was the turning point for me in saying, okay, I can keep helping other people, but I don't know what I don't know. And so it took a little bit of time. I ended up having a client recommend joining NABO, the National Association of Women Business Owners, a couple of years ago. And during one of my first couple meetings with them, one of the national level members said, why don't you apply to this program that we have? It's the Establish and Ready to Grow program. I had just brought on a business partner post COVID because again, a dear friend of mine seeing what I can't, she reached out and said, what's holding you back? And I'm like, girl, look at the way it's May of 2021. You've been here. Like you see it. I mean, and at life at that point was, we were coming out of COVID. My children had been trapped in our house for over a year. I had pivoted to virtual work and then vacation property management because, again, my husband is immune compromised. And he had been diagnosed with cancer again in July of 2020. And we just completed a 6-week stay in Houston for a clinical trial. Like, what's holding me back? Woman,
what's not holding me back?
And again, she said something and she's like, well, what if I help you? And again, I went, oh shit. Like, yes. Yes is the only, knowing what I knew from 2018 when our community caught us. Yes, that would be great. I can pay you $0. And she said, we will figure that out. And so she and I embarked on this journey together. NABO Established and Ready to Grow was a program that we both applied for and were accepted into. I ended up winning a pitch contest, which took me to the Women's Business Conference in Louisville in 2022. Amazing experience, you know, 1,000 other businesswomen who were further in their journey than I was, amazing speakers and sessions. And I mean, I came out of that going, okay, I'm a CEO, not I'm a business owner and I'm going to fake it till I make it, but I'm a CEO and I have the skills to do this. I just don't have the knowledge. So since then, it's kind of been these little breadcrumbs of, oh, well, have you heard about this program? Nope, but I'll apply. So I did the NASDAQ milestone circles. I did the Cornell University Certificate of Women in Entrepreneurship. And then it was the Goldman Sachs program, which is what I'm doing in Dallas right now.
Right, which is how we got connected.
That is how we got connected. And this, each one has been the right fit for me at any given moment. Like the stars have just aligned and each one sort of, it's not that the programs are designed for me, but they are definitely designed for people who are where I am in my business. And so the Established and Ready to Grow was virtual only, you know, like 20 women and just speakers every week or so through Zoom calls. And then the Cornell University was a 16-week program, virtual, you know, designed and taught by Cornell University. That was enough of a dip in the dip back into the academia water. So I'm like, I don't want to go get my MBA, but I do want to keep learning. I want to know where the sticky points in my business are so that we can continue to grow this. And the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program has really been instrumental in that. They, like, you get into the nuts and bolts of, your business, and they make you look at those blind spots that you've got and troubleshoot your way through. And the peer support has been a huge piece of that. And so it's really just been continuing to hear about those opportunities and saying yes. And just really, as you say, getting really curious about how can I be a better leader? How can I be a more present mom? Because really that's what we're doing with our business, is we're giving our clients back that bandwidth and their evenings and their weekends. I have preached this for years. Taking my own medicine is a little bit of a trip. So,
Oh, honey, I don't know anything about that.
Right? Like, we do as I say, not as I do. Exactly. But figuring out ways to train my team and empower them to take off pieces of the pie from my plate that I don't need to be doing. Because again, recover and get shit done, girl. I don't have to be the one doing all of this. And to have peer support where they're all saying, "Whew, I need to work on that too. What's your next step? Or how can I support you through that? Like, how can I help you think through what this looks like?" That makes it so much easier. When you've got a group of people that are in a growth mindset and driving for that next level of growth in their business, it's amazing. It's powerful. And it's like, I am exhausted after driving to and from Dallas once a week since January. Never for a second has it not been worth it.
Well, having made that drive a lot of times myself, yes, there is just something about that 4 hours in the car. It's a haul. I mean, it's sometimes 3.5, but still it's a commitment, and that's pretty amazing. Yeah. So again, you know, one of the main things that I like to ask all of the guests on this is, you know, how does curiosity show up in your body? How do you notice, you know, what, especially like when you're talking about what's in alignment? Because again, that intuition and curiosity and the recognition of what is the next step, you know, like when you're talking about all these different programs that are coming around, how does your body help you to clue in that, oh yeah, this is a good one, that one maybe not so much? How does that show up for you?
So for me, and that was such a, I had to pause for a minute and really think about how does it show up in my body to be able to talk about it. And so I'm so thrilled you asked that question, because now I'm much more conscious of it. So it occurred to me that as I'm reading through program descriptions or meeting with people who are, you know, associated or, you know, employed by these programs, as I'm kind of discussing with them, it's definitely an intuition gut feeling for me, but it's a feeling of lightness and excitement, not, you know, it's an excited gut feeling. It's not a, I don't know about this. If I have any hesitation, then I really start to dig into what is it about this? Is it the time commitment? Is it financial? Is it, I just don't like, there's something about this person that just doesn't resonate with me. And it might be a combination of those, but once that really clicks for me, I can feel it move to my hands and I'm like, ooh, I need to create something. And so it's really interesting how that happens. And again, like I was very aware of like the gut feeling, but like noticing and engaging with that shift from my gut to my hands, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to do something with this. So it's kind of it's an interesting two-part process. And until I do something to create, I'm antsy. My skin feels too tight. Are they cicadas that like split down the back and like shed their old skin and come into their new? That's kind of the feeling that I get, is just that sort of this container is too tight for me. Mm-hmm. And I need to create something new.
That's so interesting. So as you're in the decision-making process, do you actually like use your hands to make something? I mean, like, I just know that when my son was little, if any, there was any kind of a conversation, you know, that we needed to have, we had to be putting some Lego stuff together. Or like with my daughter, actually, even as a child with me, one of the things that my mom would do a lot whenever we were having, you know, if it was a bad day at school, she'd pull out the Play-Doh. Well, in my case, it was actual clay because, so we'd be, you know, doing that. But that's when I would be able to talk some more. Do you do something like that as part of your clarification process?
I do. So I was diagnosed last year with ADHD, which is one of those things, like once I started digging into what it looks like in adults, so many things from my childhood clicked. And so when I'm doing something with my hands, my brain is engaged enough that it quiets and I can think through and problem solve and be more solution focused as opposed to just noise. So I have, as any good ADHDer, I have many hobbies. So, I do quilting. I make whipped body butters. I do Legos with my kids. I do puzzles with my husband. I play a ridiculous amount of word games on my phone. I'm currently remodeling an Airstream in our yard. Like, it's just something that I, you know, I need to engage my brain. I do a lot of cooking and baking. Like, I mean, anything to kind of give me a little piece of my brain that's focused on that, but it's not something that keeps like is all encompassing where I need to focus on just that thing. It's stuff that I can kind of use muscle memory to work my way through. And as I've realized that, it has become much easier and faster for me to make decisions, to problem solve, to like process through things that are happening, things that I need to think about. You know, strategies that I need to, like, there's something sticky that I can't quite get past. That's sort of my cue to, okay, step back, you know, organize the closet, do a batch of body butters, you know, just disengage a little bit from the problem so that I can then relax my brain into a space where the problem and solution will come to me easily, as opposed to that, like, forced battle. Mm-hmm.
I think that is so great that you have so many strategies and so many different productive activities that feel productive. Maybe, you know, the Lego thing, it's like, okay, well, what do I do with this later? I love cooking and I've really gotten into, you know, baking bread. I was one of those who had my sourdough starter during the pandemic. And
what else are we going to do, Beverly?
Exactly. And sadly, I could not get that to work out. But boy, my yeast bread game is good.
Okay. So I also struggle with sourdough and felt like it was a personal failure. So if you also struggled with it, no, it's the bread.
It's the bread. Absolutely.
No other way. It's just, it's not an us problem. It's the bread.
I will say I've never been officially diagnosed with ADHD, but I have done enough reading. My son has that diagnosis and it would not surprise me at all if that wasn't enough, you know, one of the things that, that I also have. One of the things that I also noticed though, is as I got older, this is where the whole menopause thing comes in for me. I was no longer able to, I guess, mask as well. I was not able to make it as the estrogen depleted. And thank you for the hormone replacement therapy gods, because I have a brain again. So that's a lovely, lovely thing. So that's kind of not really necessarily the topic that we were discussing, but it does have a lot to do with the fact that many people are challenged with organization, with you know, putting things back where they're supposed to go. Because I know for me, there were times when it literally felt like whenever I would try to focus on something, there was another part of my brain that was just pulling it away to say, no, but this over here is more interesting.
Look, the shiny object.
Exactly. And when I could actually feel that happening in my brain, that's when I was like, okay, this is no longer just a willpower thing. There is something biochemical happening. And that's when I was exploring further. When you're working with your clients, are you finding that most of them also are challenged with that? Or is there another subset of people that tend to gravitate towards you and your services?
So we actually work with a lot of neurodivergent professionals and families. So my younger son was just diagnosed with severe ADHD, which was no surprise to anyone who knows him. He is one of those kids, like once we figure out how to channel that energy in an effective way, he is either going to be like the world's best CEO or maybe a dictator. We're nudging him towards benevolence. But he's just, like, he is a force. And the more you try to wrangle it, the worse it gets. And so we really are just kind of giving him broad direction.
How old is he again?
He's seven. He's seven. And he's just like,
there's something about that generation that they're just not having it.
My friend group refers to that as the second child syndrome, where like the first kids lured us into having the second. Like they were easy, they were compliant, they were lovely. Those second kids, though.
That was the opposite for me. The first one almost broke me, but we have our daughter. So different. So different. And absolutely amazing humans, both of them, but so different. So anyway, but yeah, so the second child.
So we have a really tight-knit friend group, and every single one of us has at least one neurodivergent child. So we've watched each other learn how to meet them where they are and how to build those strategies to help them when they need to focus, and I need to do something with my hands, but I can practice my spelling words out loud. And so same kind of strategies that I'm using as an adult, I learned those from my friends' kids and from my friends who are infinitely smarter than I am. And so we in turn go into clients' homes with an eye for, okay, they told me that they have an autistic son who's very into trains. So I walk in and I see their entire dining room is nothing but trains. I'm going to ask, is this a special interest? And if the answer is yes, we don't touch them. That child is going to know if that train was moved a quarter of an inch. And so that's one of our strong suits that really differentiates us from other clients, is acknowledging, yes, it would look tidier and more visually appealing if we put this away. It is going to trigger a meltdown to end all meltdowns. That is not worth it. That does not align with that family's needs. And so understanding that it's not all about the Instagram pretty, their homes need to function for them. And it needs to be a peaceful, smooth process, not one that feels like we're coming in and going, you're doing this wrong. So we kind of carry that neurodivergent lens into clients' homes. Sometimes we're just there to body double. Body doubling is the technique where you literally just have another person sitting next to you. You have a bunch of emails that you need to write. I'm going to sit next to you and fold laundry, and we're going to do this together. And so seeing that and honoring it, because it's a superpower. When people who have neurodivergence are in their zone of genius and engaged with their special interests or the thing that really ignites their passion, they're incredible. We don't want to fight that. And so one of the things that we're like, we're not just organizers, we're maintainers. So you want the Instagram pretty pantry with all the decanted ingredients and things that looks just gorgeous? Great. We're going to come in once a week. And while your laundry and dishes are running through machines, we're going to be that piece that maintains, so that they don't even have to think about, oh, I did a Costco run and now I need to have 2 hours to decant all these things into the pretty containers. It's the impossible task. You know, as soon as the shine wears off that, oh, this is great, and the reality of I have to keep up with this kicks in, it feels like another failure. And we don't want to set up our clients for that. So where a lot of our clients, their zone of genius is their work, whether it's attorneys or entrepreneurs, or in, you know, we've got a couple of inventors that we work with, which is amazing. I love it. They're not great at the little details of renting a house. Same. Giving them grace and saying, hey, let me take this piece that you're not great at so that you can do what you do best. It feels like a win every single time.
Now, when you say we, it's, since it's not you anymore, how many people have you employed?
So we have 13 W-2 employees.
Wow.
It's been a wild few years since 2021.
That's actually pretty impressive growth for, you know, for starting out at, you know, with this type of business. That's incredible. How do you find the right fit? So when, that's another thing that I think is super curious, because when you're finding employees and who really are collaborators, they're, because it sounds like you said earlier, you're really trying to empower the people that are doing this work. Again, getting back to the curiosity piece, how does that show up when you're looking at resumes, when you're interviewing people? Is it the same kind of process that you get the little tingle in your stomach and then your hands start to want to like make things, or is it there's something different?
It's a little bit different because I don't handle our first round interviews. So we have a team member that handles those. She's been working with us for a couple of years as a personal assistant or home manager. And so she's really attuned to the work that we do, the level of task management and time management that it takes, and the level of responsiveness that we expect from our team. And so she does the first round interviews and kind of call. We have an astonishing amount of applications every single time we open up a new space. We'll get 200-300 applications.
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot. And so she'll pare it down to 5 to 10 that she wants to interview with. And then we usually pass the top three through to me. Again, I'm not a sit behind a desk and like, tell me about your work experience type. So when the weather here in Texas allows, I take applicants out for a walk with me and we'll walk a mile or two. It brings the walls down and really allows us to have a genuine, authentic conversation without it being a power, it balances the power dynamic to some extent. And so I have found that I get a much better feel for who they are and how they fit with our company values and our culture versus skill set. Skill set we can train. I want every single one of our employees to really align with our company and what we do, and understanding that like we are meeting clients a lot of times at their absolute most vulnerable. They feel like they are a failure of a person, a partner, a business owner, like an adult. Like I can't even manage to keep up with my laundry. What kind of an adult am I?
Oh. See, I feel all of that right here, because I remember when my own children, you know, when my kids were little, and you know, all the school papers are coming in, and I was just like, I can't do this. I'd had breast cancer at 36, and chemo brain is a very real thing, and it's so rough. Yeah, and so here I am. I'm you know, was recovered from that. You know, we're talking 22 years ago. So yeah, life is good. But still back then it was like, I'm not handling things. So I did bring someone in, and she was one of those organizers who kind of, I mean, she was doing her best, but it was a lot of that, well, you're kind of doing this wrong. And you know, here, let's do this. We're going to put, you know, my organization style in here. And I'm like, okay.
Work with me.
And then my mother-in-law came in. She came in for a visit as I was paying this organizer to leave. And she was like, wait, what? Why are you paying somebody? You know how to do this. And I'm like, ah. And again, it was that vulnerable moment. What I didn't realize happened, though, is that she realized that, oh, I'm going to be an organizer now myself. That was her second career for many years. Yeah. Wow. And a lot of what, and so it just was like, okay, so my meltdown inspired someone else to go, you know, expand into their zone of genius. And I eventually figured out how to manage the papers. It was not that system, but, but you know, it is that vulnerability. It is that, you know, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but there's been a couple of times during this conversation where things that you've said have just really touched me. And, you know, I'm looking in, you know, myself and the recording going, all right, yeah, I'm about to like burst into tears here.
Oh no.
No, it's great. It just means that your ability to put people at ease and that you are working with other individuals who are also able to hold the space and then organize it for those people. You're right. That helps offer that successful feeling. Mm-hmm. Because when you are not, how do I say this again? Clutter in feng shui is not all, you know, piles are not always a bad thing in feng shui, because there's this horizontal surface that for people who are visual is a perfect way to organize things and to like, so then like put in a process that, okay, I'm going to work on this and I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this. When things get bad when things get problematic is when the piles get really high. And you just like, I can't handle that. The emotions that are trapped in that stagnant pile of paperwork, that is stuck energy. It's the emotional challenge of dealing with it that is far greater than the actual act. And so another time that I had an organizer come in, and essentially she was doing the body doubling thing with me. It's when I realized that whatever was at the very bottom of this one particular pile that was the linchpin, she had me grab it and flip it upside down. I dealt with what was at the bottom first, did all the boo-hooing and, you know, just the emotional release that required.
Right.
Everything else just went like, boom. Do you find that as you're working with these clients, that they also are having similar emotional releases?
Yeah. I have had many, many clients cry on my shoulder, I don't know why this is so hard for me. Because it's not just this thing. This is just the tiny crumb that is too much on top of everything else. Fairly early on in my to-doing career, I had a person reach out. And when I walked up to her door, realized that this was someone that I had interacted with before. She was a friend of a friend. Never knew her name. I'm terrible with names. And she's like, okay, I need help with our office. And I said, okay, well, show me. And she literally had to shove against this door because it was the dumping grounds. It was an entire bedroom in their house. And she got it open and literally it was knee to thigh high, entire room, trash, clothes, furniture, everything. And her immediate thing was, no, first of all, she's like, I'm so ashamed of this. No, you've got two young kids. Like, you're volunteering with the Austin Parks Department. You're volunteering with their daycare. You're taking them for hikes. You're super mom. Are you kidding me? And she's like, no, it's too much. And she went to shut the door. I said, go get me a few trash bags. She's like, I don't even know where to start. We're going to start at the top of the edge that we can reach. Mm-hmm. The entire room took us about 3 hours to just weed everything out. It was mostly trash that they didn't need. You know, it just, it slowly became this monster behind the door. It was a monster of shame and embarrassment and failure and everything. Ooh. It was a symbol that she was not enough. Mm-hmm. And so for me to come in and say, We're going to start at the top of the edge we can reach. And we'll make as much progress today as we can. And we're going to do this together. You don't have to do this by yourself. Everything mm-hmm. feels better when you're not.
Here I am. I'm like whipping.
You should be a motivational speaker is what I'm learning here. But by taking it down to, we're just going to do as much as we can today. And I'm going to come back. It's not my stuff. I don't have an emotional reaction to this. It's just stuff. It's a lot of stuff, but it's just stuff.
And the stuff all has a story attached to it.
Yes.
And that's, again, another one of these things that I also come across a lot in feng shui when I'm working with a client, because it's like, okay, well, why do you have this broken coffee table here?
Right.
And usually you have to dig through, you know, what is that emotional thing? So one of the other things that would be so interesting to me, because I've also come across those kinds of rooms where, you know, again, it's, and that usually at that point when I say, I've got some numbers to share with you, because this is not where my zone of genius is to actually dig through all the stuff, but here's some folks whose zone of genius it is. Depending upon what part of the house that the clutter collects in has clues for me, because that the Bagua map is just you take a space and you divide it into the 9 equal sections, and then each section corresponds with a different aspect of life. And so depending upon what sector that is falling into, that often is the underlying piece behind the shame. Because again, it's been very interesting. I've noticed in myself, this again, I'm going to tell on myself because I'm not telling on any of my clients. But I noticed in myself, the East sector, which corresponds with the family and ancestors and like your family of origin, et cetera. I realized in both of my homes, the one that we lived in Dallas and the one that we live in now, that's the one that typically all the clutter would gather in. And once I realized, oh, look at that pattern in my own self, it's like, okay, so
interesting.
That's when I was able to start talking to my therapist about, okay, we got to focus. Now we're going to dig into. but yeah, so that would be another interesting thing for you to pay attention to, especially in those, you know, the shame rooms. I mean, because Yeah. Or the shame closet. You know, the simple fact is you can't just hide it away just because you don't see it. It doesn't mean that it's not impacting you.
It always comes back.
Yeah, like a boomerang. Okay, so let's kind of move on to the next question, because I want to make sure that I am, covering all the things that I like to talk to about. You know, is again curiosity, and how was that for you as a child, and how are you managing the curiosity piece now that you are a parent?
So, I admittedly was a very curious child. I was a reader. Now looking back through the lens of being raised in the 80s and early 90s, and not like girls weren't diagnosed with ADHD, and reading was my special interest. You want to know who nobody is mad at? A kid who finishes their homework fast and reads. And so this wasn't a problem. I started reading when I was about 3. Cereal boxes. Begged my mother to please teach me how to read. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, voracious reader. I would stay up all night. I still can't allow myself to read new books at night because I will be awake until the end.
Oh, geez.
And so, but in that, like, it's knowledge. It's just direct access to whatever I want to know or however I want to feel, or, you know, it's an incredible thing to have access to. And so, as I have become a parent, finding what my kids are super into and developing ways for them to engage with those topics while also teaching them, okay, I know you really want to do this right now. Let's do this for 10 minutes. And then we're going to step away and do your bath and your, you know, brush your teeth. And then we can go back to it for extra time, especially with my neurodivergent 7-year-old. He's big on extra time. Actual time on the clock does not matter. If he feels like he gets to go back to the thing he wants to do right before bed, it makes everything else easier. So we don't fight it. We build it into our day. And watching him figure out how to navigate the world. Like my older son, easy peasy. He does what you ask him to do. You tell him to get off his video game, computer, whatever. You know, you need to walk away from the Legos. Does it, no problem. My little one, he is just like me. And so teaching him how to honor that, but also get what needs to be done is something we're learning how to do together. And we've tried different things. We've tried rewards. You know, if you get 7 points at school, you earn this thing. It didn't work. You change the points to stickers. Magic. He struggles with intangibles. Mm. The points don't mean anything. What's a point? It's what you're trying to earn. But is it? It's just a word. You put something tangible with it. He doesn't care about stickers. Like generally, the kid never plays with stickers. That's what he's earning to get to what he really wants every single time. Works like magic. So again, really digging into the internet to find what, like, I have this point system. It's doing nothing for us. And somebody else goes, try this. And you start researching it, and it all traces back to they struggle with intangibles. It's like a light bulb goes on. You know, great. We'll try that. So as I'm parenting my kids, which admittedly, like, I don't know if you've noticed my mug that I've been using, but I'm an awesome mom. Part of that is realizing I'm making mistakes, like, all the time. I am just, like, I'm doing the best I can. And first of all, giving myself grace, because we don't do that enough as moms. Giving myself grace, like, sometimes my best is absolute garbage. But if it's the best I can do, I'm not going to beat myself up over that. And so saying that to my kids, I'm really sorry that I snapped at you yesterday. I was doing the best I can and it wasn't great. You know, can we start over today? I love you so much. That was a me issue. Continuing to learn how to model things for them. Like, I want them to understand that humans are messy. Like, it is in fact all of our first rodeo as a human. And so we're doing the best we can. And sometimes that's going to be awful. It's just the way it is. But teaching them how to take accountability for that, how to be vulnerable and authentic, and finding ways to maintain that connection with them. I lost my mind at you last night. I screamed. That wasn't right. I'm going to do my best to do better, but I'm still going to have times when my best is terrible.
I've had a lot of those conversations with my kids now that they're much older. So, you know, my son is going to be 30 this year. That blows my brain out. And my daughter is in the process, going to be 27. So, you know, they're grown adults. And every now and then I kind of look and go, wait, how did that happen? But I also have some time, you know, moments when I will see parents who are interacting in ways vastly different with their children than I did with mine, and wishing I would have had the internet to be able to look up, you know, what are some other options? All I kept getting is, oh, you need the Love and Logic book. And I'm like, do I look like I have time to read?
Right.
Well, yeah.
If that doesn't work for you, if that's the resource that people keep throwing your way, that's not helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's either that or the Bible. And I'm like, I'm sorry, neither.
But it's yet another way you're failing. If this doesn't work for you, you're failing.
Exactly.
Nobody likes to feel like they're failing. And when that's, you know, have you read this? Yes, I've read it. Have you tried this? Yes, I've tried it. What now?
Yeah.
I guess you're screwed.
Well, Kate, you have brought so much loveliness and depth and honesty and hope and gentleness and strength all together in this interview. I am so grateful you gave me this time to get to know you a little bit better and to share you with everybody on who's listening to this. How can they get a hold of you if they're, so I'm assuming that you're only in the Austin area, the Austin, Texas area.
Currently, we are only in the Austin area. It is April 2024. We are gearing up to launch in Dallas and Houston.
Oh,
so exciting. We are currently doing new client interviews for that. So people can find us online. We're on all the major social networks under Queen of To Do. And then our web address is queenoftodo.com.
Excellent. And are you mentoring any other potential, like the woman in Iowa who helped you get started? Have you had anybody reach out to you for that kind of advice?
I really haven't yet. And what's funny is the Goldman Sachs program that I'm doing in Dallas right now, they have a platform where they connect all of the alumni from the program across the US. There's 14,000 people at this point. She is on there. She completed the exact same program in Des Moines. And so I am pouring into my team. No other company that, you know, house service, home management company has scaled like we are. And so by pouring into my team, I know we're going to continue to make that impact. I correct myself. I did have someone who owns a personal assistant company in Omaha reach out. Okay. And she and I are actually planning to get together next week when she's visiting Austin. So very excited about that.
That's amazing. Because again, what I keep feeling here is how you're coming across and just your heart for making the world a better place, you know, one family at a time. It just feels too big to be kept small. And so I'm grateful that you're here, that you are helping these other people are on your team and everybody else that you're coming into contact with. Kate, thank you so much. I will be putting your contact information in the show notes so everyone will be able to connect with you. If there's anyone else that has a question, certainly you can contact me about the whole feng shui piece. That will also be in the show notes. But until next time, thank you so much for being a listener to the Curiosity Solution.
Thank you so much.